The Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast.
Welcome to Local Flavor Live, a podcast about the food and drink scene in Baltimore. I'm your host, Lauren Cohen, and I'm back today with the magazine's food and dining editor, Jane Marion.
Yo, LC. Wait for it.
I feel like I sound like a robot every time I do the intro, so I'm trying to like mix it up a little bit every week.
I don't know.
I'll try to be better about that.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. How's it going?
Good. All good.
Keep on keeping on.
All good. It's so weird. Yeah, I'm still digesting my lunch.
Yeah.
I had an eggplant sandwich from Patango.
Oh, yum. Yeah. That sounds great. I haven't been there in a while.
Yeah, I hadn't been there in a while either. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
The best chocolate chip cookies.
Oh.
Remember those? We went one time.
Yeah.
The best.
Well, I went to Sacre Sucre first and spent a ton of money because I'm having guests for dinner tonight and tomorrow night.
Oh, great.
So I bought a lot of pastries and macarons. I'm sort of limiting my sweet intake right now during the day.
But that's like a one-stop shop, especially when you want to impress guests at a dinner party.
Yeah.
Love Sacre Sucre.
It is. If for anyone listening who hasn't gone, really best macaroons I think I've ever had and the most gorgeous pastries.
Yeah, that's saying something.
Yeah.
Speaking of pastries, it's actually a good segue.
Yeah, I set you up.
You did. You set that ball right on that tee, and I'm gonna knock it right out of the park. So we actually heard this week that there is a new iteration of Roganart. I know we've talked about Roganart a lot on the podcast because it's kind of had this weird trajectory. The original Falls Road location is now closed, but there is a new location, as far as we know, still on track to open inside of Whitehall Mill when that opens later this fall. But another cool iteration that we heard about this week is this place called Pekara. It's spelled P-E-K-A-R-A. It's actually the Serbian word for bakery. And it's the former co-owner of Roganart and the head baker that have teamed up to bring this new cool chapter of Roganart. It's going to be a bakery that's directly across from Miss Shirley's in Roland Park. And it's slated to open in November. It sounds like it's going to be, I don't want to call it like a Roganart 2.0 because I think they're definitely going to put their own spin on it. But a lot of people, I know you were a regular on your morning routine. Yeah, a lot of people who miss it, they can check out very similar pastries. So the head baker, his name is Borislav. He's going to be doing all kinds of fresh baked breads. I was talking to the co-owner Radomir earlier this week, and he said that Borislav gets in there at like 2 a.m. and he bakes all night to make sure that everything is really fresh for the morning crowd. So white breads, rye, challahs, spelt grains, multigrain varieties, all of those different loaves that people came to rely on at Roganart. And then he's also going to do the signature croissants and fruit tarts, Danish pastries, French pastries, and this savory, it's called Burek, B-U-R-E-K pie. Mm. It's traditionally made with meat and phyllo dough and feta.
Wow.
Yeah, so it sounds great. I'm really excited for people who loved Roganart so much. I think, I'm not sure what the full story is between the co-owners and why they decided to kind of go their separate ways. But I think now there's obviously the Roganart in Columbia that's doing really well.
I've been there.
Yeah, and then in Whitehall and now in Roland Park. I think it's going to be a really cool kind of next chapter for it.
Yeah, so I'm a little confused, though. So one of the owners is going to Whitehall.
Yes.
Do we know anything about that?
Yeah, I expect it to be similar. But, the baker that's going to this new place, Pekara, was the head baker, from my understanding. So I'm not sure if the recipes are getting passed over to a new baker at Whitehall or there's going to be a new menu entirely. That's something that to my understanding, it's going to be similar, the pain au chocolat and everything that people really loved there. And there might be differences in the coffee programs. Radomir mentioned earlier this week that the coffee program at Pekara is going to start out very simple. you know, a little bit of espresso and things like that, but he really does want to focus on the baked goods first and foremost. So I imagine, I'm kind of looking at it as a Venn diagram, I imagine they're going to be similar in a lot of ways, and there'll be a lot of overlap, but I think, you know, especially people who are in that kind of like North Baltimore area, it'll be nice that they have options.
I think I would have been way better at math if the math teacher had used pastry analogy, Venn diagrams. I totally understand it now.
Yes, yes. Oh, man, math is not my strong subject either, so it's funny you bring that up. So another thing, this week we had a closing. So Melody Cafe closed, which is a sad one because that became – so this is the subterranean space that's in Mount Vernon. It was previously The Room. I don't know if anybody remembers that, with the really cool wall mural on the ceiling. And it's sad. It became really very much a community hub for people. They had open mic nights. They had karaoke. They had community meetings. And it closed. The details are still a little blurry, but as far as we understand, it closed because the landlords of the building had given the owners 60 days notice to vacate. And the owners have a great story. I remember interviewing Daryl Strange back when it opened in December 2017. He is the father of a teenage son, Jawan Davis. Jawan was 17 when it opened. So
wow.
Math again. He's probably around 19 now. And Jawan had just recently graduated a cooking program, and his dad was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, sign a lease for this space.
That's
and,
awesome.
Yeah, and this is going to be your, you know, space to really put into practice everything that you've learned. And
that's love.
It's totally love. That is absolutely love. And I think that story kind of permeated throughout the years. It became you know, such a well-liked place, and they made a lot of relationships within the community. So it's sad, but, you know, from what I understand, it seems like the sentiment is that they're looking into other iterations. It was kind of like on social media when they announced it, it was kind of like a, you know, not goodbye, see you soon type of thing.
Yeah, sounds like a kick in the gut for them.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, it's just, I think the real sad part is that it was so much more than a cafe. And I think that that's really special to have those places that have that community activation. So all the best to Daryl and Jawan, and hopefully we'll see them soon. And we had a brunch bulletin this week. So a brunch bulletin is when we have enough brunch news to put into our open and shut column. That's what we call it.
This is like headline news. It should be above the fold.
It should be above the fold. But it was cool. So the Urban Oyster launched brunch last week, and kind of in a really big way, they rolled it out. So it's Saturday and Sunday brunch from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And they rolled it out with Beats and Brunch, which was like live DJ music and the new brunch menu and cocktails and things like that. So this is, like I said, it's weekdays weekends from now on from 11 to 3. And the menu features options like a crab cake and fried oyster Benedict, Cajun jambalaya topped with a runny egg, and a shrimp BLT waffle sandwich, which sounds really good. And another cool thing about the Urban Oyster, they're going to be doing drag brunch every fourth Saturday of the month, which is cool. I feel like drag brunch has totally taken
off. Definitely trendy.
Yeah. So excited for Urban Oyster. This is Jasmine Norton's project that opened in McHenry Row. She had been doing the pop-up oyster bar. We had her on the podcast, actually, very early on. She had been doing her pop-up Urban Oyster around town for years, and then she finally settled in this home base in McHenry Row. I actually ran into her not too long ago. I went to, I went to Smorgasburg in D.C.
Oh.
And she was there, and she's awesome, and she's so talented. But, you know, I was just kind of waving to her, and she was like, oh, my gosh, like, you know, it's so exciting to see you outside of Baltimore, I guess. And she was telling me, she was like, and we talked about Smorgasburg. This is the big kind of farmer's market, like open air pop-up market.
Right, because I thought it was Smorgasbord, which I remember from my youth.
Yes, it originated in Brooklyn, and that's why. But she actually said to me, she was like, you know what, she's from there, and she was like, this was my dream. When I saw this in Brooklyn, I wanted to be a part of this festival. And now, you know, years later, she's a part of it in D.C., so it was exciting to see her there, and I'm so psyched for her. She's doing, you know, great things with the community, and So really cool. Another new brunch spot to check out. Also, the Night Brunch is launching a brunch festival. So the Night Brunch, we've written about it in the magazine. It's Jason Bass and DJ Impulse, Ryan Rhodes. They do these kind of like roving pop-up brunches that inevitably just turn into big night dance parties. I've been to a couple. They're a lot of fun. So that was pretty cool. But, you know, Jane, I know you have your own feelings about brunch. We're talking all about brunch. And by the way, it's okay. I think it's interesting. We this is the 1-year anniversary of our big brunch cover story that we did last year.
They made me do it. I mean, there's a lot of great brunch spots in town. There's no question. Some places specialize in breakfast. Right. Some places like Ananda, which I know you went to. I mean, they're, you know, you don't think Ananda brunch, but, you know, it's wonderful fine dining Indian food. Mm-hmm. You go there for dinner. But they also have a brunch, or Woodbury Kitchen has brunch, Clavel, Petit Louis. And there's so many different varieties of brunch, drag brunch and bottomless brunch and fine dining brunch. But, yeah, I don't love brunch. Number one, it's just too much food. Just I don't like that food, like that heavy feeling first
like
thing
a food
in the day.
Coma. You don't like those.
Yeah. Maybe it's the yogi in me. You know, morning to me is yoga, not like eating and drinking.
Yeah.
I'm not much of a day drinker. If I'm on vacation, I might have a glass of wine or something, but it's just not really how I it kind of is the day. That's the point I made in the story, is that, you know, it's a commitment to spending your day around a meal, which can be wonderful. It's communal. But it's just not my thing.
Right.
I know Anthony Bourdain didn't like brunch either. He said, you know, it's sort of like when restaurants have like their B shift working. Nobody wants to, you know, wait on drunk people, which largely that is the point. Not always, but often.
Yeah.
And then sometimes restaurants are just using up like the things that they couldn't use all week, and then that thing ends up in an omelet.
Right, you know? Right. It's a way
becomes
to just kind of
special.
Clean the fridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I just, yeah, I don't know what it is. When I was younger, I used to go to brunch a lot. I think it's sort of like a college thing to procrastinate from studying. And
right.
And I think so, it's just, yeah.
Yeah. So my feelings are very different. And I think it's really interesting and very ironic that you are the way that you are, because you edited one hell of a brunch package, which
I'll link to.
It's beautiful.
And I ate brunch for it, too.
You did. You did. But I think what's great about it, I'm kind of reminiscing here, is that we kind of covered it from all different angles. We have... like you said, those brunch, those fine dining spots that you might not think have a killer brunch, but
right.
they do.
Mm-hmm.
There was an essay in defense of brunch.
Yeah,
which,
Max Weiss.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's interesting. You know, it's kind of gotten this... There's
a bad rap.
There's a connotation. Yeah.
It's like you're in the con or the pro column.
Yes.
You're not in between.
Yes, there's no in between. And it's weird because I kind of consider myself a little in between, because I get it. I think as much as it takes up your whole day on a Saturday or Sunday, it also eats up your money.
Yeah.
Because brunches can be expensive, especially when there's no bottomless option and you're just continuing to order Bloody Marys and mimosas and things like that. I think a lot of restaurants have caught on, and they've kind of noticed if you don't have a bottomless option, it's going to hinder you from taking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I used to brunch a lot more when I like first graduated college, moved to the city. It was just kind of like, it was having a moment.
Very Sex in the City.
Yes,
yeah.
It was the thing to do. And I think, but now I think I brunch more because I respect and I, you know, just really love the offerings. So places like Ananda, like, that is totally worth that drive.
Yeah. What did you eat there?
I had, oh gosh, everything.
Do you remember? I know it's been a year.
It's been a year, but it's kind of like one of those unforgettable experiences. So obviously the Gominda, which I talked about from Ambassador, the cauliflower with the tamarind. We had, I think, lots of tikkas. There was lots of naan, which was perfect because we were drinking. So it's kind of like having something heavy on your stomach. Mm-hmm. And then I'll never forget closing out the meal. So it's all buffet style, by the way.
I knew you got recognized
yes,
by the owner, Binda Singh.
Who is such a gem. And I don't feel special at all because I feel like he recognizes all of his regulars. He has a relationship with
everyone.
Yeah,
I'm not going to argue that. He's just so lovely to everyone who comes in. You're in his home. It's that Indian hospitality.
Yeah, for sure. But I'll never forget, we closed out that meal with, I'm forgetting the Indian word for it, but the glazed honey balls. Those donuts.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then there was this chai that was so calming and beautiful. And like, I can't remember what time of year I went, but we were sitting on the patio and they served this warm chai. I think there was a rice pudding also kind of closing it out.
Lovely.
It was so lovely, especially the setting of being on their patio and having this warm drink to finish out your meal.
Yeah.
It was incredible. I think that's definitely one of the standout brunch spots.
It's special no matter what meal you go there for. I like breakfast for dinner. So
Brinner.
Yeah, I do like that. I like omelets for dinner. I'm the only one in my house. So if I'm ever alone at night and no one else is home, I'll do my own thing and make an omelet for dinner.
And you're not a sweet breakfast person, right? If I'm recalling correctly.
I like pastries.
Okay.
But I don't like, I'm not a big waffle pancake.
So like the Captain Crunch French Toast. That's Blue Moon?
No, that is under the guise of something savory or possibly nutritious, but it's just empty calories.
Yeah.
You might as well
I'm the same way. Like I'll get, I will get savory brunch, like eggs. I like Benedict's. I like the food market actually does like a turkey sausage taco for brunch that I like. It's really good. But yeah, if somebody orders like a cinnamon, like I'm thinking of Blue Moon now, like the cinnamon rolls there, I'll have like one bite and it'll be enough.
Yeah, you know? That I could do, like so a little good. Piece.
Yeah.
One thing I do remember for this story that I love doing was going to Liberty Delight Farm to see just the chickens laying eggs, to talk
about In Reisterstown,
yeah. Like what makes a good egg? You know, why is the fresh egg better than the supermarket egg? It really does have a totally different taste. And if you break open the yolk and it, if it floats, then it's fresh. Even the color, it tends to be a little more vibrant, a little more orange instead of that like pale yellow. And I met some of the piggies. I know, it's a little sad, but they actually have a great life there. They're totally free range. They're drinking from the stream. They're very loved, and yes, eventually they do become bacon, but, you know, it does make sense that if they're raised with love that the meat's going to taste better.
I believe that.
They live healthy lives, and for as long as they are walking around the farm, they're happy.
Yeah.
So it's
so sweet.
You know, if you're going to eat meat, it's a responsible thing to do to go and see where the meat is coming from.
Yeah.
I understand people who don't want to eat meat for a variety of reasons, but if you're going to eat it, you know, you have to sort of embrace the whole cycle. So they're doing very good things and raising animals really humanely out there. And I got to pet a rabbit. I don't think they're breeding the rabbits, but they had some pet rabbits.
Right.
Yeah.
And they do, I'm just thinking about Liberty Delight now, they do meat shares and they do a lot of different community programs.
Mm-hmm. And they have at least one cow that came from the Rockefeller estate. It's like this expensive, like purebred cow that they only use for breeding. They might have more than one, I forget.
Yeah.
Special kind of cow. Yeah. It's Rockefeller cow.
It's the fancy cows.
It's a fancy cow.
I know we're, you know, I'm totally patting us on the back a little bit, but I think that also goes to show, like, you had so many innovative ideas for this story and just kind of looking at it from all angles, from the producers to, you know, really how that food gets on your plate.
And then also, so Lydia Willever, our senior editor, did a piece on butterpat pans.
Yes!
Which are,
a great one.
Cast iron pans, largely now, you know, they become really trendy. They're sometimes skillets, you know, skillet breakfasts, like the place in Hamden.
Chuck's
Trading Post, which is on our list, where the whole, you know, egg dish arrives in the skillet.
That's another brunch I'll never forget.
Yeah, it's I don't own a butter pat. They're beautiful. They're a couple $100, I think.
Wow.
But I have Lodge pans that you can get at Target. I've got a bunch of them. I don't think they're more than $15-$20 a pan, depending on the size. I use them exclusively now for almost all my cooking, but especially, you know, home fries, bacon, anything that you really want to brown. browns beautifully in those skillets. Wow. So anyway, Lydia went to the Eastern Shore, where actually she's from, and that's where Butter Pat is based, and they've become really trendy. They've been in a lot of the high-end food magazines, that is defunct, sadly. That was one of my favorites, though.
Yeah.
Bon Appetit, Food and Wine have featured Butter Pat.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, now that you've jogged my memory about Chuck's, I feel like I have to get back there.
Yeah, Chuck's is awesome.
And all just totally focused on the skillet, which I think is cool. They do the pancakes in the skillet, the eggs. There's a name for these. They're
huevos?
Yes, but they call it something else. Oh. And their pancakes are in a skillet. Everything. Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of a place you'd find on the side of the road in Colorado. There's something like a little bit Wild West pioneering about it.
Yes, like all the way down a hill and right in the middle of a neighborhood with a bunch of row homes. It's been fun looking back on this feature because I think it was so great, and now I have to go have brunch at a lot of these places. And I will definitely link to it for anybody who's interested in trying out a new brunch spot or reading more about Liberty Delight and their mission there. How's everything else been going? I know you've been doing some interviews for our upcoming feature focusing on local producers and makers.
Yeah, Made in Maryland.
Yes.
We're doing cover story on all things Made in Maryland. I'm doing just a small piece on local artisans making scratch-made products. And, we're just seeing it. This started, I don't know, I'm going to say 5-6 years ago, it started gaining some traction.
Yeah.
And I have an interview coming up with Michelle at Michelle's Granola.
Love Michelle.
For this piece, I didn't interview Gail Fishman of Woot Granola, but we've written about her extensively. There's a lot of great granola on the market.
Yeah.
And I got to catch up with Gingy Frazier of Gingy's in Belvedere Square. Hadn't talked to her literally since her business started, so I just asked her, what's changed in these 5 years? And she's just, gotten more and more popular. She's traveled all over the world looking for farms that are female-owned. She explained that, a lot of the cocoa plantations are, the labor is done, the workforce is female, but the men own these farms, and she wanted to find a female-owned farm. So she's been kind of traveling and looking, and at one point was sourcing her beans from, I think, Mexico and Guatemala. Now she's sourcing from Puerto Rico and I believe Trinidad. But she's gone to these places, met these women, talked to the farmers, tasted the beans. It's not just a chocolate bar.
Yeah, and chocolate is something else where you don't really – we talked about this a lot last week. You don't – when you take that bite of chocolate, it's not very often that you realize what has gone into making.
Totally.
Especially her chocolate. Definitely – it's not a Hershey bar. It is not – it's completely different.
And you wouldn't really even want to eat the whole bar. Mm-hmm. It's very rich. It's delicious. It's so satisfying that just a couple of bites – she said her ideal customer is someone who – buys a chocolate every couple of weeks, maybe eats one or cuts it in half if it's large, saves half for the next day. But her dad, Guy, works with her. He's a former military, and he's as much of the ethos of the place as she is. They're both just really calming and gentle people. But one story she told me that I loved is that I asked her how – I knew that she had been a holistic nutritional counselor, I believe. And I don't know if you remember when Woody Harrelson came to town.
Yes.
He's a vegan. And he was good friends with the Black Olive And their Agora Market was not doing so well. And he had offered to – I think he became a part owner.
Yes.
And they did a fundraiser at the Black Olive with a vegan meal. And that Woody was – I guess the idea was you buy a ticket and you get to eat with Woody Harrelson. So – Gingy was called in to help with the menu because she was a nutritional counselor and she was vegan and she was a raw foodist like him. And she was telling me that she realized, they didn't have dessert on the menu. And she ended up somehow there was a postcard on the ground that she tripped over and it was for raw chocolate classes, workshops.
What?
Yeah. I'm not sure why the postcard was there.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, that's how she got into it. So she started taking classes she has Woody Harrelson basically to thank for it
all. For her career.
Yeah.
How serendipitous is that?
Yeah. Wow. And I think at first it was all about the fact that this chocolate, I think it's called Pure Chocolate by Gingy, yes, is what it says on the label. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's raw chocolate, it's gluten-free, it's vegan, it's healthy for you. I mean, yeah. I think that, I mean, that's still a focus, but it's not even necessarily the point anymore. She's sort of moved a little bit beyond that, and to focus on where the beans are coming from, to expand her flavor profiles. And I'm excited to go back and try it. It's been a few years. Her chocolate covered figs used to be my absolute favorite.
Oh, yeah.
I think they have peanut butter in them.
Oh, that's amazing. And
so,
I mean, it just goes to show, we talk about this all the time, like people now more than ever, they want to know exactly where their food is coming from.
Yeah.
And there are so many people like Gingy who locally are bringing that to light. I think about a lot of the coffee people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's similar in the way that they source coffee from other countries and things like that. But so cool. Wow. Gingy,
yeah, it makes
is,
you,
I love
it makes
I can't
you feel,
stop thinking about that story.
Yeah, it makes you feel really good when you support someone like that.
Yeah.
So today I'm having dinner tonight for my family, and then tomorrow night we have some cousins coming in. I walked over to Broadway Market to buy from Sal's at Sal's Seafood.
Good.
And, you know, I've actually never shopped there before. But now that I'm not sure I honestly even knew about it. It was in the old Broadway Market. It wasn't as visible as it is right now. A place where I usually get my crab meat closed this year. And I called a couple days ago and I said, "Do you have Jumbo Lump?" He said, "Every day, all the time." And I, you know, went over there today and I bought from him. He also had these giant Gulf shrimp from Texas I bought, and a piece of salmon from the North Atlantic. So, and I talked to him a little bit. So that felt good to me. I mean, normally I get my seafood at Whole Foods, which is also great. But frankly, I'd rather go to Sal's.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have that FaceTime with the producer, which you can't always get at a grocery store.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Are you making crab cakes?
I am making crab cakes. Yum. You know that they're from out of town, so they've got
to
get crab cakes. I got string beans from the farm truck. I've been doing these charred string beans. I almost overcook them to the point of them blistering.
That sounds so good.
And I do it with a little bit of charred garlic, actually. And I buy usually green and yellow, well, the white string beans.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to roast potatoes. That's all for tomorrow. And then the macarons and a couple other pastries. I even got the sea salt caramel marshmallows from Sacre Sucre. And then tonight I'm probably going to do scampi. And this doesn't really go with it, but I bought pierogies from Sophie.
Ooh, yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe it'll just be an appetizer.
You made your rounds at Broadway Market.
I made my rounds, and yeah.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Wow. What a dinner party. I can't wait to hear
how it goes. Two nights of different dinners. My boys are not picky.
Right, yeah. That sounds amazing. Wow.
They're easy to impress.
Well, while I'm hungry, should we talk about our best bites of the
week? Yeah, we had a shared best
bite. We had a shared best bite.
You go.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to talk about, before we talk about our shared best bite, while we were on the subject of brunch, I was just thinking about, I had a really great brunch recently at Harriman House in Reisterstown.
Oldie but goodie.
Yes, definitely an oldie but goodie. We had a bar exam recently about Harriman House in the magazine, but really great brunch. It's, you know, that's where I grew up in that area. So I met some friends there, and they have a quiche of the day. And when I was there, it was very, very Maryland. It was very end of summer. It had jumbo lump crab in it and sweet corn, and it was cooked so well, very flaky dough. And there's some fresh fruit on the side. And to me, that's perfect brunch.
I could get behind that.
Yes.
Brunch. I love quiche.
Yes. It was so good. And again, it's like, you know, where am I going to get a quiche everywhere I go? No, but I think it was a special and, you know, it turned out to be really well done. So it was really cute on a Raven Sunday. Everybody was in their jerseys.
And they've been around forever, though.
Forever.
Place,
yeah. I feel like almost everyone I went to high school with, but all my like hometown friends, a lot of them had jobs there.
Oh, really?
When they lived.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Did you ever work in food?
No. We've talked about this. I've never worked in food, but that's why I think it's so fun for me when I get to go to do like the behind the scenes stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get, you definitely have an appreciation for all of the work that goes into that showtime, like we were calling it last week. But, you know, no, I actually never did. I worked, we talked about this too, I worked at a daycare center.
Oh, right. That's right. I could see that.
I did.
I've always wanted to be a server.
Yeah.
I think, for a day.
Yes. And you have the right personality for it. You're just so lovely and kind and welcoming.
I can get flustered, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. To be honest, like, you have to be so disciplined and really just, like, also a lot of, like you have to be able to answer any question, any possible question that anyone has about the menu. I think that's really intimidating.
Well, if you can, it makes you a good server. But I've had some servers who were like, I told you. There was one place I reviewed not that long ago, and the server said to me, what do you want from me?
What?
Oh, you did tell me this. Recommendations. Oh. And she said, I don't know what you want from me.
That's like the basic. You just like, if you don't know, you just pick something. I've had that, you know, when you ask servers and you know that they're just completely just pulling it out of thin air.
Sometimes they'll say the whatever is popular.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they like it.
Right. Or they like look over your shoulder and they're like, that looks good, you know. But then, you know, on the flip side, there are so many places where you get such amazing servers who can, at the drop of a hat, just answer any question that you have.
I had an experience this summer where my husband was asking if the fish and chips was good at a particular place, and the waitress, the server, said, that's the dish everyone returns.
But I appreciate that. I'm sure you did too. Like, the honesty.
We did. We didn't get it.
Yeah, absolutely. So our shared best bite, which we can talk about, we got a drink at Uzo Beach, which is one of the newer Atlas restaurant concepts. We got like one last, I mean,
right,
I don't
across
know.
Across the street.
Yeah, if the weather ever turns, I think, I don't, it's
we had
just
one
been
last
so hot.
Day at the beach.
Yeah, exactly. But we got a trio of dips, which were really, really good. The one that had brioche in it was amazing.
It's unusual. Yeah.
It was called Scordalia. I don't know if I'm saying
it correctly. And the brioche, it was just almost like breadcrumbs.
Uh-huh. But it was more of like a, there was like an almond
sweet
taste to it too.
Sweetness,
And then we got a, just more of a traditional tzatziki. Mm-hmm. And then one with eggplant and tahini, which we liked.
Yummy. The Greek wine. And what did you get?
I got a mojito.
Mojito.
I was feeling beachy.
Nice Cuban drink.
You know what? When the weather starts to feel like it's fall, then I'll start to change all of my preferences. But if it's 90 degrees, I'm going to have a mojito.
What do you drink in the fall?
Oh my gosh. Lots of spiced cocktails, rum, cider. I'm not really a bourbon person or like a whiskey person in general, but if I were, then I would probably drink a lot of that in the fall. But lots of ciders. My mom and I like to drink, especially when it snows, warm apple cider with a shot of Fireball in it.
Oh.
So good.
Yeah. I'm not a cocoa person, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited for the weather to drop a little bit so that we can really get into that
feeling.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that next week if it gets below 90.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much, Shane. It was fun walking down memory lane and talking all things brunch with you. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. You can now pick up a copy of our current October issue, our eGlobal issue, on newsstands, and you can check out our food coverage every day at baltimoremagazine.com.
Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast.